the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, February 5th, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We've got another very special episode of the Russ Belville Show coming up for you today, digging deep into the politics of America's last absolute prohibition state, my birth state of Idaho, the gem state. That's right. We're going to be covering Idaho both hours today, Toker Talk Radio and the Russ Belville Show, because the Idaho State Senate, in a bare two-thirds majority, they passed it by one vote. They passed the constitutional amendment to forever prohibit all drugs in the state of Idaho, including, of course, medical marijuana. That's just terrible, of course. Yes, and so it's not a done deal yet. It still goes to the House of Representatives in the state of Idaho, where they need 47 out of the 70 representatives to vote for it, to pass it on to the voters, and then the voters would have to approve it by a 50% majority, and it would be in the Constitution. 100 years after we put alcohol prohibition in the U.S. Constitution, Idaho's going to make the same mistake and try to put drug prohibition in its Constitution. So the debate went down on Thursday, and I've got the debate went down on Wednesday and the vote happened, and I've got the audio from the debate featuring State Senator C. Scott Groh. That's right, a guy named C. Scott Groh is going to prohibit ever-growing marijuana in Idaho. C. Scott Groh's SJR 101. We've got the debate, his quotes, a fire hose of falsehoods from the senator from the city of Eagle. We are going to debunk them one by one by one coming up in the Radical Rant. Also, a few other senators, and you got to understand, folks, when we're talking about the state of Idaho, there's an old saying, welcome to Idaho, set your clock back 30 years. And in this case, it's absolutely true. When we're talking about the subject of cannabis, it might as well be 1991 in the state of Idaho. You know, George H.W. Bush will build more prisons for him. You know, before Bill Clinton, I Didn't Inhale got into office. That's how far back the education, the mindset, and the understanding of cannabis is for the legislators in the state of Idaho. Not the people. The people get it. 3/4 of the people of the state of Idaho believe that we should have a medical marijuana program very similar to states near us, like Montana, like South Dakota, like Utah. Any of them will do. There's 36 of them that have medical marijuana laws. Pick one. It's so hard for me to understand why every state thinks it needs to reinvent the wheel when it comes to how they're going to set up a marijuana program when there's 36 marijuana programs to choose one. Find the one that fits and use it. So we're going to be talking all about that on the show today. Plus, I'll give you some updates on what's happening with potentially, I shouldn't say potentially, it's going to happen. The first ever medical marijuana bill that may get a hearing in the state of Idaho. Now, there's been some proposed before, but they never got a hearing. This one is being proposed by a 22-year Air Force vet who's a terminal cancer patient. He's got his oncologist on his side. His name's Sergeant Jeremy Kitzhaber. I've had a chance to speak with him. We may have an interview with him someday on the program as well. But as medical marijuana bills go, again, they could have picked any one of the other 36 states' medical marijuana program and come up with something better than this bill. So we'll talk a little bit about that and some of the problems in that bill if we have enough time toward the end of the show. And of course, as we always do here on our Fridays at the Russ Belville Show, we start things off with the Cannabis Headline Newsweek to get you caught up on all the national and state level news happening in the world of cannabis.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at Patreon.com/RadicalRuss. With your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, February 5th, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. In a vote that went largely as expected, the Idaho Senate advanced SJR 101, the proposed constitutional amendment to forever prohibit currently illegal drugs, by the two-thirds margin needed to send the measure to the House. 24 senators, all Republicans, supported the resolution. Senator Jim Rice was the lone Republican who was not already a sponsor of the bill to vote for its passage, making him the swing vote that gave Senator C. Scott Grow a victory for his resolution. The chamber's seven Democrats all voted against the measure, joined by four Republicans. In defending his measure during debate, Senator Grow insisted it is the legislator's job to promote temperance and sobriety, and, using a metaphor from the Civil War movie Gettysburg, that his measure is about defending Idaho's culture from well-financed, out-of-state interests that seek only to profit from drug addiction in Idaho. If passed by two-thirds majority in the House, SJR 101 heads to the 2022 ballot, where a majority win cancels any win by either potential medical or recreational initiatives on that ballot, and prohibits any future initiatives to legalize any illegal drug. Idaho's drug laws would be tied to the federal FDA approval, which will never happen for whole plant cannabis. Three leading champions of marijuana reform in Congress said on Monday that the issue will be prioritized in the new Democratic Senate this year, and that they plan to release draft legislation in the coming weeks to begin conversation about what the federal policy change will look like. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden, and Senator Cory Booker said in a joint statement that ending cannabis prohibition, quote, is necessary to right the wrongs of this failed war and end decades of harm inflicted on communities of color across this country. But that alone is not enough, end quote. On the heels of announcing that marijuana reform will be a priority issue for the U.S. Senate in 2021, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said on Tuesday that he urged Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland to, quote, respect the rights of states that have legalized marijuana, end quote, during a recent meeting. Cannabis was one of only four specific policies Schumer mentioned in a two-paragraph statement issued following what the majority leader called, quote, a very productive and important conversation, end quote, with Garland and President Joe Biden's nominees for other top Department of Justice posts. Senator Ron Wyden, who assumed the top spot in the Senate Finance Committee under the chamber's new Democratic majority, says that federal legalization of marijuana is the best way to clear up numerous problems for the state cannabis industries.
End the prohibition and come up with sensible tax and regulatory oversight at the federal level. This is a framework that I've championed and I'll be championing as chairman. You do that, you take care of the banking question, you take care of the tax question, you take care of the research issue, and this whole array of issues that have been gridlocked because the federal government on cannabis has been tethered to yesteryear.
While Wyden didn't point to any specific bills in the podcast interview, there are numerous pieces of legislation that could fall within his committee's jurisdiction, including comprehensive proposals to federally legalize cannabis that would involve imposing excise taxes on marijuana sales. After selling a whopping $670 million worth of recreational marijuana during the first full year of legalization, Illinois pot shops reported record sales of $88 million in January. While the implementation of Illinois' recreational pot program has been marred by an ongoing licensing controversy, the sales have largely kept rolling at dispensaries across the state. January sales, released Tuesday, outpaced the $86 million reported in December. Last month, Illinois residents accounted for over $63 million in sales, and about $25 million went to out-of-state residents. For now, Illinois pot shops are operated by the same group of owners that dominated the medical cannabis market before recreational sales were made legal. All told, those operators reported over $1 billion in medical and recreational weed sales last year. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte said on Thursday that he wants marijuana tax revenue to fund drug treatment as the state grapples with the consequences of substance abuse. But that is not how those dollars were designed to be appropriated when voters approved a legalization initiative in November.
So let me be clear. Tax revenues from the sale of recreational marijuana should go to confronting the epidemic of addiction in Montana.
Montana's marijuana legalization initiative that passed last year calls for half of an estimated $52 million in annual revenue to fund environmental conservation programs, with smaller portions going to veteran services, healthcare, local governments, and the state's general fund.
The governor of Kansas on Monday unveiled a plan to legalize medical marijuana and use the resulting tax revenue to fund Medicaid expansion. This comes as lawmakers in the state have already introduced two separate cannabis proposals in recent days. Democratic Governor Laura Kelly held a press conference to announce her legislation, arguing that Kansans are ready for marijuana reform, which she said would provide patients with a critical alternative treatment option and would give the state the resources to expand health care with even more money left over.
The bill establishes the regulatory framework for the cultivation, testing, distribution, prescription, and purchase of medical marijuana. The introduction of this bill in itself is a win for Kansas, who will benefit from medical marijuana, something that once again our neighbors in Oklahoma and Missouri have already recognized and addressed.
A strong majority of Virginia residents, including most Republicans, are in favor of legalizing marijuana for adult use, according to a new poll. The survey, published on Tuesday by Christopher Newport University's Wasson Center for Civic Leadership, comes as bills to legalize cannabis have swiftly moved through multiple committees in the legislature ahead of a key mid-session deadline to get them to floor votes on Friday. Asked about the policy change, 68% of respondents said they were in favor of legalization, compared to 32% who said they were opposed. Legalizing marijuana got the most support of any of the three criminal justice proposals included in the poll, which also asked about ending the death penalty and eliminating mandatory minimum sentences for certain crimes. A demographic breakdown shows that legalizing cannabis enjoys majority support from every group surveyed. Law enforcement agencies could assist Oregon farm regulators with inspections of hemp crops under a bill that's intended to thwart illegal marijuana operations. Sheriffs from Jackson and Josephine counties in southern Oregon are urging lawmakers to pass House Bill 2296, which would allow their agencies to cooperate with the Oregon Department of Agriculture on hemp inspections. Sheriff Nathan Sickler of Jackson County said during a recent legislative hearing, quote, "Our illegal marijuana enforcement team has found that the ODA licensing has created a shield for those that are growing marijuana," end quote. Representative Lily Morgan of Grants Pass, the bill's sponsor, said there's too little verification that cannabis plants grown under industrial hemp licenses are not actually black market marijuana. A Republican senator in Alabama has once again filed a bill to legalize medical marijuana, and advocates think 2021 may be the year that the state finally moves to allow patients to access cannabis. Senator Tim Melson introduced the legislation which would allow people with qualifying conditions to access cannabis for therapeutic purposes. To qualify for the program, patients would have to be diagnosed with one of about 20 conditions, including anxiety, sleep disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, and intractable pain. Regulators would not be able to independently add additional conditions, leaving that decision up to lawmakers. One problematic provision from advocates' perspective is that, for patients with chronic or intractable pain, they could only be recommended medical marijuana in cases where conventional therapeutic intervention and opiate therapy is contraindicated or has proved ineffective. The bill, which has been referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee, prohibits raw cannabis, smoking, vaping, and candy or baked good products. Patients would instead be allowed to purchase capsules, lozenges, oils, suppositories, and topical patches.
I think the people want us to do this in pretty high numbers.
That's New Mexico Democratic Senator Daniel Ivy Soto referring to the bill he has filed to legalize recreational marijuana in the land of enchantment.
We end up diverting a lot of law enforcement resources to something that is more of a nuisance as opposed to something that puts other people's safety at risk.
Ivy Soto is proposing a program in which private businesses would control the sale of cannabis as opposed to the state, and it would be taxed 21%. Republican Senator Cliff R. Pirtle is making his second run at getting a marijuana bill passed. Pirtle said his bill would keep taxes low by imposing a 2% excise tax on top of local gross receipt taxes. An influential group of Minnesota legislators is renewing a push to legalize recreational marijuana this year as more neighboring states allow and reap the financial windfall from legalized cannabis sales. 15 states, including South Dakota and Illinois, have voted to legalize recreational marijuana, and supporters in North Dakota are trying to get legalization on the 2022 ballot. Republicans who control the Minnesota Senate remain opposed, saying the state is facing far more serious problems with the COVID-19 pandemic, balancing the budget, and reopening schools. Democrats have the support of at least one GOP lawmaker. Representative Patrick Garofalo from Farmington said in a statement that he looks forward to working with legislators on both sides of the aisle, as well as the substance abuse recovery community, on the issue. A Star Tribune NPR News Minnesota poll a year ago found that 51% of registered Minnesota voters support legalizing marijuana. Maryland Senate Finance Committee Vice Chair Brian J. Feldman, a Democrat, has filed legislation to legalize adult-use cannabis and pump funding into communities that have been adversely impacted by its current criminalization. In a phone interview with Maryland Matters, Feldman described the bill plainly, quote, "It's a cannabis legalization bill that would tax and regulate cannabis sales," end quote, he said. But it does a lot more than decriminalize. Several measures in the bill look to address socioeconomic and criminal justice inequities experienced in black and brown communities. Under Feldman's legislation, businesses in the state's existing medical cannabis industry would pay fees into a social equity fund to be used for low-interest loans for minority business owners to enter the industry. He asserted that his bill, which he warned will have amendments, will put Maryland at the top of the list in terms of social equity provisions. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy signed a psilocybin reform bill into law on Thursday, immediately reclassifying the possession of up to 1 ounce of psychedelic-containing mushrooms as a disorderly person's offense. The new classification means individuals caught with small amounts of psilocybin are now subject to a maximum $1,000 fine, up to 6 months in jail, or both. Previously, the offense was a third-degree crime and carried a penalty of between 3 to 5 years behind bars and fines of up to $15,000. The change puts mushroom possession on par with simple assault, harassment, shoplifting, or resisting arrest in New Jersey. Senator Nicholas Scutari, a Democrat who first introduced the mushroom amendment, said Thursday of the change that mushrooms are still illegal in New Jersey, but, quote, "it's not going to ruin lives for a first offense," end quote. Washington lawmakers on Thursday introduced landmark legislation to decriminalize possessing small amounts of all drugs and expand treatment services for people with substance use disorders, part of a growing trend of U.S. states backing away from a crime control model of drug enforcement and instead treating the issue as a public health matter. The proposal will eliminate criminal penalties for possession of so-called personal use amounts of controlled substances and direct the Washington State Health Care Authority, or HCA, to craft a plan under which, quote, "continual, rapid, and widespread access to a comprehensive continuum of care must be provided to all persons with substance use disorder," end quote. Voters next door in Oregon passed a similar policy change in November's election. That law took effect this week. Possession limits under the proposal, dubbed the Pathways to Recovery Act, are not yet specified. They would be determined by a September 22 HCA workgroup. New York lawmakers had some choice words for the governor's marijuana legalization proposal on Thursday, describing it as watered down and all wrong because they feel it inadequately addresses social equity and instead values revenue generation over justice. During a press conference, Senate and Assembly members and reform advocates took Governor Andrew Cuomo to task over the legalization plan he outlined in his budget request last month. Legislative leaders said the proposal shows that the governor isn't serious about enacting the policy change and called for the passage of a bill out of the legislature instead. This is the third year in a row that Cuomo has included a legalization proposal in his budget plan. The last two times, negotiations with the legislature stalled over disagreements over certain components, such as the tax structure for the market and funding for social equity programs. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman says state Republicans removed flags supporting the legalization of marijuana and LGBTQ rights from outside his office at the state capitol. Undeterred, the Democrat called out, quote, "the gay flag police," end quote, and hung them back up. According to WGAL, the State Department of General Services said the flags were removed because of a provision passed by the Republican-controlled legislature barring the display of any flag other than the American flag at the Capitol. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman told NBC News, quote, "the GOP collectively shrugged when a couple of its members were photographed down in D.C. on January 6th, but my pride and weed flags are a point of outrage for them," end quote. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, February 5th, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show Live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio. Yeah, there's your Newsweek update. And again, you can get the downloads of the Cannabis Headline News and this week-ending Cannabis Headline Newsweek at my Patreon page.
That's patreon.com/radicalrus. And for just $4.20 a month, you can get six, because you get the five, one for each weekday, and then you get the sixth one on the weekend that wraps them all up for you. You also get the podcast download of Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio here, the second hour of this podcast. It's coming up very soon, so stay tuned for that. And also, remember that this hour of the podcast is always absolutely free, so you can just go to RadicalRust.com and get that right away. Check out the downloads from any of your podcast sources like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere you get your podcasts. Oh my goodness, look at the time. It's 4:20 here in the Mountain Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. While we're away, check out some messages here from Radical Russ Radio. The Coffee Pot in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I hope you were as much fun on that dais as you were on your couch.
Well.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.
This is Russ Belville for Cannabis Headline News. Get the day's top five news stories in marijuana in just 5 minutes every weekday with Cannabis Headline News. Available now to paid subscribers at patreon.com/radicalrus or listen at the top of every hour on the 24-hour Radical Russ radio stream at radicalrus.com. Now, as a service to listeners considering the use of pharmaceutical medications that, unlike marijuana, are approved for medical use by the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the Russ Belville Show presents the Big Pharma ad of the day.
Lunesta helps you fall asleep and stay asleep so you can wake up feeling rested. When taking Lunesta, don't drive or operate machinery until you feel fully awake. Walking, eating, driving, or engaging in other activities while asleep without remembering it the next day have been reported.
Wait, hold up. This drug might make me drive in my sleep?
Abnormal behaviors may include aggressiveness, agitation, hallucinations, or confusion.
And become aggressive while hallucinating?
In depressed patients, worsening of depression, including risk of suicide, may occur. Ask your doctor if Lunesta is right for you. Get Lunesta for a $0.
Medical marijuana. Not approved by the FDA, but you'll rest well without road raging somebody in your sleep.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today on The Rant, we are taking an extended look at the debate in the Idaho Senate over the passage of SJR 101. This is the resolution to place a constitutional amendment on Idaho's November 2022 ballot that would ask the citizens if they wish to forever prohibit all Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. Or in other words, the important part of this, to forever prohibit medical marijuana in the state of Idaho. Because there is no popular will in this state for legalizing all other drugs. The only reason they're bringing up this constitutional amendment is because they know there's tons of popular will for passing medical marijuana in the state. And it's only been a question of the money necessary to get the signatures to get it on the ballot that's ever stopped it from happening in the first place. But as states around them continue to legalize and pass medical marijuana, they know the pressure is on. And this is their last stand. You'll actually hear some of the senators say, this is the last stand in America for any place to be a conservative, drug-free state for people to run to. So let's get to the testimony. We start with Senator C. Scott Grow. Yes, I know. C. Scott Grow. Grow, Scott, Grow is the proponent of Senate Joint Resolution 101. And he is also, I think it's just interesting to note, a member of the General Authority of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints since 2005. Actually, I think he was the president of that assembly at one point or another. So a very high-level leader in the Mormon Church is proposing that we constitutionally prohibit all drugs. On close to the 100th anniversary, actually a year prior, now it's 2021, but about 100 years since we had alcohol prohibition in the Constitution of the United States, and we saw how well that worked out. So let's start with C. Scott Grow, and him talking, he's introducing the debate on Senate Joint Resolution 101.
The ultimate goal of special interest groups, for-profit companies, and those threatening anyone backing our effort is simple. All roads lead to the decriminalization of drugs. We've seen that in our neighboring state of Oregon.
Yep, because there's 36 states that have passed medical marijuana laws, and since one of them passed drug decriminalization, well, then it's inevitable. That's just the way math works, right? It is not the inevitable destination of medical marijuana. These are separate issues. This is the problem with people like this, is they think that drugs are just one issue, drugs. When in fact, we are talking about CBD oil, we're talking about industrial hemp, we're talking about medical marijuana, we're talking about recreational marijuana use, we're talking about drug decriminalization. They're five distinct policy planks there, five different things. And there is nothing about helping a cancer patient be able to use a plant to treat their nausea and pain that then forces people to go, well, you know what? We ought not to bust people for coke. Like, how does that connection work? Is medical marijuana the gateway policy? Is that it? It's the gateway policy. Once we let sick people use a plant to treat themselves, we all suffer a collective delusion that makes us want to legalize drugs further, I guess.
No society or person's life is improved by using illegal drugs.
Really? I'll have to tell that to my life partner, Lori, who beat cancer with Rick Simpson oil. An illegal drug. Yeah, I'll have to tell her that. I'll have to tell all my friends who've battled post-traumatic stress from their time in the military. Everybody I know who battled leukemia, people with multiple sclerosis, people with epilepsy. I'm sorry, all of that relief that you thought you were feeling? No. Senator Grow says that your life was not improved by illegal drugs.
Reasons for the bill. In April 2017, 31-year-old Andrew Zorn took his own life after saying that he had been addicted to marijuana. And this bill is about more than marijuana. His suicide note read, quote, "My soul is already dead. Marijuana killed my soul and ruined my brain."
Listen, suicide is a terrible thing, and depression is a terrible thing. And there are people who have drug dependency issues. There are people for whom marijuana is not a good thing to use. That being said, didn't all this happen when marijuana was illegal? I mean, follow the logic here, because you hear this a lot from these senators that'll tell these tales of woe and devastation from drug addiction that happens when drugs are illegal. So follow the logic. Drugs are illegal because they're really, really bad. And we don't want people to do them. But then some people do drugs anyway. So to fix that, we're going to make drugs really, really illegal. There. That'll stop them.
His mother, in the email she sent me, said drug legalization in the state where he and she live led to his death. And she said, in conclusion, don't let legalization happen in Idaho.
So drug legalization led to his death. It was legalization that forced him to use a substance. It was legalization that caused the reaction to that substance. And it was legalization that ultimately forced him to take his own life. Wow, what a powerful policy legalization must be. This is just the worst kind of emotional demagoguery on the behalf here of the senator, trying to get people to short circuit their logic and go straight to the lizard brain, go straight to that emotional, oh my God, what about the children feeling? Yes, bad things happen. Sometimes bad things happen with people's use of marijuana, but that doesn't argue for banning that thing. In fact, it argues for regulating that thing.
Our state constitution demands it. It says, quote, the first concern of all good government is the virtue and sobriety of the people and the purity of the home. And it goes on to say, the legislature, I repeat, the legislature should further all wise efforts for the promotion of temperance and morality.
Now, he's absolutely correct on that. Article 3, Section 24 of the Idaho Constitution is the section that says promotion of temperance and morality. The first concern of good government is the virtue and sobriety of the people and the purity of the home. The legislature should further all wise and well-directed efforts for the promotion of temperance and morality. So I thought I'd take a look at the temperance and morality of the state of Idaho lately, because I saw this report from the Centers for Disease Control that says excessive drinking results in 437 deaths and 12,311 years of potential life lost each year in Idaho because people aren't being temperate with their alcohol. And yet it's legal for adults. So why hasn't Senator C. Scott Grow included alcohol in SJR 101? How come alcohol prohibition isn't being added to the state constitution if he's so concerned about the promotion of temperance and morality? I looked up some more stats because, you know me, I look shit up. From the Centers for Disease Control, about 16.6%, 1 in 6 Idaho adults binge drink. That's defined as when a woman drinks 4 or more drinks or a man drinks 5 or more drinks in one sitting. And that stat's from 10 years ago, 2011. 16.6%, 1 out of 6 Idahoans are binge drinking. Now, that's 2011. That was the year before Washington State legalized, right? The first state in the Pacific Northwest to legalize weed. So in 2019, you take a look at that stat for Idaho, binge drinking is still at 16.6%. So consistently throughout time, at least over the past decade, 1 out of 6 Idaho adults binge drinks. Meanwhile, in Washington state, 17.8% of adults were binge drinking before legalization, and now that rate is down to 14.1%. And when it comes to binge drinking in the state of Idaho, because we know Senator C. Scott Grow is very concerned about the virtue and sobriety of the people, then he must be terribly worried that those 1 in 6 Idahoans who do binge drink, drink on average more than other states when they binge drink. We drink more drinks, 7.4 drinks on average in 2015. Meanwhile, over in Washington State and Oregon, when they binge drink, it's in the 6 drinks range. So in Idaho, Joe Sixpack is more like Joe Sevenpack. Is this the culture that Senator C. Scott Grow is so intent on preserving? This 1 in 6 Idahoans binge drinking? Is this why Senator C. Scott Groh intends to forever deprive Idaho adults of choosing instead to use marijuana, a substance that is objectively safer to use and safer to society than alcohol is. Is that why he's not including alcohol in his constitutional drug prohibition amendment? Well, on that last point, no, actually. Because the power of the legislature to prohibit alcohol is already in the Idaho Constitution. In fact, it's just two sections down from that temperance and morality section that's so beloved of C. Scott Groh's. There's a section 26 that reads, power and authority over intoxicating liquors from and after the 31st day of December in the year 1934, the legislature of the state of Idaho shall have full power and authority to permit, control, regulate, or prohibit the manufacture, sale, keeping for sale, and transportation for sale of intoxicating liquors for beverage purposes. Interesting, is it not, how Senator C. Scott Groh seems to have no political will to use that constitutionally mandated legislative power to do with alcohol what he intends to do with marijuana. Apparently, the Idaho Constitution demands temperance and sobriety only applies to marijuana, doesn't apply to alcohol.
In conversations, phone calls, emails, Idahoans do not want the insignificant tax dollars gained from the sale of psychoactive drugs when Idahoans can instead preserve Idaho's culture by continuing to promote the health and safety of our children.
Insignificant tax revenues from drugs. We're talking states pulling in $350, $400 million when you're talking Colorado. In the city of Ontario, Oregon alone, one little city, one tiny little town that has just 11,000 people is pulling in $8 million a month in marijuana sales, mostly to Idahoans. And from that $8 million in marijuana sales, they derive 20% of that in taxes. So the state has made somewhere around $1.5 million on the city of Ontario, Oregon alone per month. And the city, it gets a 3% city tax off that. That works out to about $250,000 per month for a city of 11,000 people. $250,000 a month, $3 million a year for a small town, because it gets to suck out all the tax money out of the state of Idaho and send all the marijuana back into Idaho. Any costs that marijuana smoking costs, whatever they are, Idaho gets to pay for them. Oregon gets all the money. What a fantastic deal for Oregon. And what a lousy deal for the state of Idaho.
This amendment will allow Idahoans to choose for themselves whether they want to live in a drug-free state, free from drug culture, or not. Should we not let the citizens of Idaho decide?
Hey, Senator Groh, I got some news for you. Idaho's not drug-free. Idaho has never been drug-free. The United States has never been drug-free. No human civilization in the history of planet Earth has ever been drug-free. Drugs exist. People take them. Now, you can punish him. You can not punish him. You can sell him. You can not sell him. You can get taxes off him. You cannot get taxes on him. But the fact is, drugs exist. People can get drugs in Idaho right now. I started smoking marijuana in Idaho in 1990. And I had a continuous supply of marijuana in the state of Idaho, grown in the state of Idaho, for 13 years. It's not a question of whether or not you're going to be a drug-free society, because you're not. Nobody's a drug-free society. The question is, how much money do you want to spend and how much effort do you want to waste trying to repeal the law of supply and demand?
Our Idaho way of life demands it. In every case when drugs are legalized, a huge black market emerges. People say, well, you know, if we just legalize the cartels go away, it won't be a problem. Just the opposite happens in every state. Do we need pot factories in homes? Do we need violent foreign cartels in Idaho? Do we need organized crime elements? Do we need deforestation? Do we want fungicides, algicides, rodenticides, and pesticides in our streams? Do we want a contaminated food chain among Idaho's wildlife? The answer to these questions is an obvious and emphatic no. That's what happens when legalization and culture comes in and moves into a state.
It's almost, you know, it's almost sad how he really believes this. He really believes that legalizing medical marijuana is what creates everything he just listed. As if it's not there now. Do we want grow houses in Idaho? Dude, they're here. They're here. Where do you think all the Idahoans are getting their black market weed? By the way, black market means this person sold to that person something that that person wanted to buy. I hate the term black market. They always make it sound so scary when most people like their weed guy. Most people are happy to see their weed guy show up. Cops, not so much. Do we want grow houses? Do we want deforestation and fungicides and pesticides? Dude, that's what's happening now. Fungicides and pesticides and rodenticides and leaking into the environment or getting into the product are not happening in regulated dispensaries across this country. Everything he just listed is something that's happening now. And this idea that it creates or brings in the cartels. No. The cartels right now have 100% of in-state business in Idaho. And by cartels, I mean everything from your weed guy who grows in the garage to the actual Mexican cartels. Whatever level you're at, let's just lump them all in together. What the hell? They have the business right now. 100% of Idaho's illicit business is from the cartels. And I'll tell you what, those cartels have felt a hit from all of these states legalizing. If you're a weed dealer in Idaho now, you got to compete with somebody being able to drive to Ontario, go into a regulated shop where everything's safe and secure and on videotape, and browsing among 50 or 60 different strains of flower alone, not to mention edibles and tinctures and everything else. Weed dealer now has to compete with that, with his one or two or three strains. His prices have crashed. His profit margins are bleeding ink. The cartels down in Mexico, the farmers that used to produce cannabis to be imported into the United States, they could farm it for about $100 a kilo. They'd get about $100 per kilogram of marijuana. It's down to $25 now. $25 a kilo. It's cut their profits down to a quarter of what they used to be. So don't give me this. Cartels are going to move in. By definition, every legal sale that happens is a sale that's not going to the criminal element. Now, is there still a black market? Well, of course there is. There's black markets in everything. There's black market Nikes. There's black market Louis Vuitton bags. There's black market DVDs. There's black market CDs. Just about anything that's marketed has an underground market. And what determines the size of that underground market is how well it can compete with the above ground market. And that's where we see states that have come out like Washington State and put a 37% tax on marijuana. Well, yeah, they got a problem with the black market. You just made a 37% margin for the weed dealer. Ironically, the thing that would do the most for the prohibitionist point of view would be the most liberal legalization possible that crashed the price so much that it would be impossible to make a living as an illegal dealer. Like, how many bootleggers have you met lately? How come there's not a lot of bootleggers lately? They asked this on Channel 7 the other day here in Boise. Does Senator Groh not realize where the bootleggers went? Because bootleggers can't make any money anymore. If you want booze, you can go to any place and get booze, and it's fairly cheap. And it's not going to make you go blind. Lessons we learned 100 years ago about prohibition. And yet they still persist.
Neighboring states have legalized psychoactive drugs, have decriminalized drugs like heroin, cocaine, meth, and LSD, etc., to the detriment of their citizens, families, communities, businesses, medical community, and police departments.
God, you'd think that Oregon has just gone to hell in a handbasket since Monday, right? the way these guys talk. Our drug decriminalization went into effect on Monday in Oregon. All it means is if they catch you with drugs, they take away your drugs and you get a ticket. It doesn't legalize them. They're not legal. Cops can still search you and bust you and harass you. They just can't throw you in a cage. Cages make lousy rehabs anyway. Regardless, that's not up for debate in the state of Idaho, and the fact that Senator Groh and these other opponents have to keep bringing up drugs kind of gives you a clue to the fact they know people aren't scared of marijuana. Gotta take a short break. Wet my whistle. I'll be right back.
Here we go. We've got the top six answers on the board. Name something that gets passed around. Chris.
A joint.
A joint.
This is Radical Russ Radio, where a joint is always the number one answer.
Now, Chris, I don't know what 100 people you thought we were talking to at some nice little mall across good old America, but I'm pretty sure the people didn't tell the survey people, hey, an illegal drug. Let's turn around and see how many weed heads are out there with Chris. A joint!
Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville. You know me, I'm from Idaho, where we've got two strains of marijuana, got some and don't. But until I can help legalize marijuana in the Gem State, I can still bring you the best the hemp plant has to offer at Boise Hemp World. Boise Hemp World features the Mama Duck line of CBD tinctures and pain creams, and the Billy Dogs line of CBD pet tinctures and dog treats. Hemp World also features CBD candy, gummies, gum, spices, and a whole assortment of tie-dye and hemp clothing and accessories. And under the laws of America's last absolute prohibition state, all Hemp World CBD products are 100% THC-free, so you won't fail any drug screenings. Boise Hemp World, now with two locations, our flagship store at 6928 West State Street in the Glenwood Shopping Center, and our new location at 1720 West State Street in the Albertson Shopping Center. We're also the headquarters for the Idaho Cannabis Coalition's campaign to legalize medical marijuana in 2022. Find us online at BoiseHempWorld.com or call us toll-free at 844-IDA-HEMP and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder. With Radical Russ.
Ear.
If an employer has to test your urine to determine if you're using drugs at work, doesn't that suggest that they would never have known about it otherwise? This has been Puff Pass Ponder. With Radical Russ.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there. And we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Yeah, I got about 11 minutes left in here in the first hour of the podcast. But remember, hour two, Toker Talk Radio comes up after that, live on RadicalRust.com. If you're listening to this as a podcast, hour two is only available to the paid subscribers of my Patreon page, patreon.com/RadicalRust, $4.20 a month. We are doing a thorough debunking of the Idaho Senate and their vote for constitutional drug prohibition, including industrial hemp, folks. Hemp's not legal in the state of Idaho. You realize that, right? All 49 states other than Idaho have, I should say, all 50 states other than Idaho, 49 states, have industrial hemp. It's legal. It's legal federally under the Farm Bill. But in Idaho, they vetoed, they killed industrial hemp. They actually had a bill, and they killed it because of concerns of law enforcement. That, oh no, if you legalize the hemp, they'll sneak the marijuana in with it. I'll tell you what it's really about, though. If hemp is legal, you then have to test for how much THC is in something before you can bust somebody. Cops, on their little field tests, have a little field test that tells you if something's marijuana, does it have THC in it? Doesn't tell you how much. The tests that tell you how much marijuana is in something, that costs a lot of money. And they don't want to spend the money. They're finding this out in Texas. Texas legalized hemp, and they're having to not prosecute people for simple possession because the crime labs can't handle the time and expense of finding out how much THC is in something. So if you want to know why the state of Idaho has been so draconian as to not pass industrial hemp and so draconian as to veto a CBD oil bill for little kids for their epilepsy, that's the reason. Because they have a law that says any amount of THC is marijuana. Doesn't matter what it's in. Any amount of THC is marijuana. So their little test, if it says THC, boom, they can haul you off to jail. They can start making a profit off you in the prisons and etc. So that's what's really going on with that. Let's return to see Scott Grow, who tells us more about why he needs to have constitutional drug prohibition in the state of Idaho.
The impact on the home demands it. Births of drug-addicted babies climb. Drug use among the youth skyrockets. School dropouts increase. Spousal abuse increases. Homelessness surges.
So a lot of this is correlation and not causation, right? If homelessness has gone up somewhere, it has nothing to do with marijuana. Has nothing to do with marijuana. Their theory here is that, oh, well, see, if people are on marijuana, then they can't pass drug tests. If they can't pass drug tests, they can't get jobs. And if they can't have jobs, they don't have homes, and so they become homeless. And another part of their theory is, seriously, people, another part of their theory is that homeless people, when they hear that some other place has legal weed, move to that place. Right. The guy in the tent on the side of the road collecting cans so he can eat. That guy, yeah, he's going to collect money for a bus ticket, and he's going to move. Yeah, sure. Right. So a lot of that is just correlation is not causation. But also, this, I looked some of this stuff up. He's just flat out wrong. Dropouts increase. Do you know what the dropout rate in the state of Idaho is? 20%. You know what the dropout rate in the state of Oregon is? 20%. Like, there is... This is absolutely false what he's talking about when it comes to the dropout rates. Increases in abuse, in domestic abuse. Are you kidding me? We're not talking about alcohol, which actually is demonstrated to lead to a statistically significant increase in spousal and child abuse. No, we're talking about marijuana, which is not correlated with that. Now, he's being clever here. Because notice during the entire tirade that he goes on, he always is careful to say drugs. He wants you to remember, oh no, the drug-addicted babies that are born. You know, addicted to coke or meth or something, right? Not that there's drug-addicted babies addicted to pot. Come on now. He wants to keep it in the realm of drugs because that's a lot more scary. But when we really look at the stats between these different states, you can explain it either by... It's correlation, not causation, or it's a completely different demographic. Like if you're talking the city of Seattle or Portland, major urban metropolises with diverse populations compared to Twin Falls, Idaho or something, that's an apples and oranges comparison. Let's go on.
When illicit drugs are legalized, drug addiction, drug overdoses, suicides, depression, psychological problems, paranoid, schizophrenia, use of harder drugs all increase. Traffic accidents and deaths increase, creating a major burden for our medical community.
And that is also entirely false. We have seen in the nation of Portugal, when they decriminalized drugs 20 years ago, they saw their addiction drop, their overdoses drop. In the states that have legalized recreational and or medical marijuana, we have seen their opioid addiction rates drop. We have seen the opioid death rates drop. We have seen the opioid prescribing drop. And as far as the car crashes and the wrecks, since 1994, the states of Oregon and Washington have had fewer deaths per 100 million miles driven than the state of Idaho. Except for the most recent year, Oregon slightly went above Idaho for the first time in 20 years. But generally speaking, Washington and Oregon have been much safer states in which to drive than the state of Idaho. This is, again, junk science, and it's frustrating that the senator isn't required. It's funny, when there was a couple of times in the testimony, when a senator would say, Madam Chair, wish to read something into the record, and he would say, this is from, we'll say Idaho Statesman or whatever the source is, and the chair would say, having properly identified the source, the senator may read the piece, right? So when they have to quote something off of a piece of paper, they have to cite what their source is. But here goes C. Scott Groh naming falsehood after falsehood after falsehood after falsehood with no stat backing it up, with no reference as to where he's pulling this figure out of. Here's some more.
Finding drug-free workers becomes more and more difficult. Absenteeism increases, and more drug-impaired employees lead to increases in industrial accidents.
So a lot of this is taken from what was called the Firestone talk. This was way back in the 70s when there was a talk given at the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company that purported that all of these things that he's saying, that absenteeism went up and productivity went down, all these terrible things happened, it was bunk. It was never based on any factual data, on any sort of study. It was just made up. And then it got cited by people after that, who then cited the citation, and it just kind of fell in like an urban legend that this was true. It's not. There is no correlation in productivity. And in fact, if you look at the GDPs of the gross state products, I should say, of these states that have these different laws, you don't see them fluctuating any differently than the average. It's just such the crazy fear-mongering. And this thing about we can't find drug-free workers, what a load of crap that is. I looked up the statistics from the construction industry in the state of Idaho from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I found between 2017 and 2018, there was a 9.6% increase in employment in the construction industry. 9.6% increase, okay? So somebody's doing them jobs. Somebody's working out there in the construction field, aren't they? In fact, the report said it was a huge increase, not a record, but close, like it was a really big deal that it went up 9.6%. You want to know what these building contractors and construction people are really complaining about? The cost of drug tests. See, when the drug testing index, there's a group called Quest Diagnostics, and they have this drug testing index where they keep stats on how many people are failing drug tests. And indeed, as legalization has proceeded apace, the failure rate for marijuana has gone up. It used to hover around 2% like that. Now it's like 4%. It's gone way up because, well, people like marijuana. And when it's legal and accessible, they will use it. I will never lie to you and tell you that legalization doesn't create more marijuana smoking. It doesn't among the kids, but it does among the adults, especially seniors. The senior rate, people over 65, has increased over 800% since like 2005. Yeah, seniors are toking. Older folks are toking. People with legal access now are toking, and that's leading to more of them failing these drug tests. But it's not like they're not finding the workers, right? Remember, the employment went up 9.6%. Somebody's doing them jobs. What's happening is they have to go through more drug tests to find those workers. The workers are there. They can find them. But it takes more drug tests. They can't just issue one or two or three drug tests and have these people fail. They're failing six or seven or eight or nine of them, and they're $50 a pop. That's what they're upset about. The cost of the drug testing. Because the use of marijuana itself, as being detected in a drug test, tells you one thing about an employee. doesn't tell you whether they're prompt, doesn't tell you whether they're skilled, doesn't tell you whether they're responsible, doesn't tell you whether they're honest, doesn't tell you whether they have integrity, doesn't tell you whether they're going to be sick more often, doesn't tell you whether they're going to be absent more often. It tells you one thing. Sometime, they smoke marijuana. And it's no more a problem at the workplace than the guy who sometimes likes to have a beer. As long as neither one of them are doing it before work or on the job, what's the problem? Hey, that's all the time for Hour 1. Stay tuned. Hour 2 is next. I'm Radical Russ from America's last prohibition state. Take care of each other, tokers. You see, you manage to grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.